This is Clinical Conversations 126th podcast. Clinical Conversations is a service of Journal Watch, the literature surveillance service whose website is at jwatch.org. It's July 15th, 2011. I'm Joe Elia. Dr. Danielle Schurer is off this week. The question of which is more important, the instrumental data or the patient's perception, is on the table today. This week's New England Journal of Medicine carries research on placebo effects, specifically in asthma studies. A group of patients with mild to moderate asthma cycled through four different treatments over a series of clinical visits. The treatments were as follows: albuterol inhalation, placebo inhalation, sham acupuncture, and finally, watchful waiting, which was the no treatment control. During the treatments, the patients were asked to rate improvements in their symptoms. Also measured were their forced expiratory volumes in 1 second, or FEV1. Not surprisingly, the FEV1s improved after albuterol, but not after the other treatments. However, the patients' self-reported improvements in symptoms all increased to about the same level after all active treatments, but not with watchful waiting. The study's authors concluded that using patients to rate improvements after treatment was an unreliable approach to evaluating new therapies, which is fair enough. The editorialist, however, Dr. Daniel Moorman, questions whether that's the most important lesson here, and he's agreed to talk with Clinical Conversations today. Dr. Moorman is Emeritus Professor of Anthropology at the University of Michigan, Dearborn. He's the author of, among other works, Meaning, Medicine, and the Placebo Effect, published by Cambridge University Press. Welcome, Dr. Moorman.
Thank you very much.
You're an anthropologist by training, and when you look at formal medical studies like this one, what do you see that's kind of common to other human situations?
I see actors and responders. Mm-hmm. I see uniforms. I see symbols of power. I see authoritarian and all sorts of other kinds of interactions between people. I see lots of interactions between people.
Mm-hmm.
I see lots and lots and lots of meaning.
Yeah, you know, your book has got that title. The first word in its title is Meaning, Medicine, and the Placebo Effect. So,
placebo effect is in quotes, too.
Can you explain the word meaning a bit more?
Well, let me take it from the other direction. Given that we're talking to a bunch of physicians,
mm-hmm.
let me start by saying why it is that I put placebo effect in quotation marks.
Mm-hmm.
What we mean ordinarily by a placebo is unproblematic. It's an inert substance designed to mimic a medical procedure. The key thing is that it's inert. If it's inert, what that means is it can't do anything. That's what inert means.
Mm-hmm.
So there simply can't be such a thing as a placebo effect. It's a contradiction in terms, sort of like the king of America. And so I think the placebo effect is like the king of America. It's something that doesn't exist. Now, at the same time, we all know that when you give people inert medications, they often respond quite dramatically and they get a lot better. So the only thing that we know for sure is that it's not the placebo that did it. So what did do it? And what I argue is that what did it is all of the other meaningful stuff that's associated with medicine, starting with the behavior of the parking lot attendant, going through the receptionist, to the what's hanging on the walls, to the art in the hospital, to the, you know, I said in the article here, our hospital has 2 helipads.
I like that.
And, you know, when you walk into a place like that, you know you're in a place of great overweening power. It's incredibly meaningful.
Mm-hmm.
And I would argue that meaning is associated with that and all sorts of other kinds of meaning: the stethoscope around the neck, the uniforms, the funny white shoes, on and on and on. All of that stuff goes together to create a sort of a generic system of meanings, which is then sort of instantiated by the specific, you know, red or orange or blue pill that the doctor gives you and tells you when to take it this way and that way and to do it with a glass of water, which is, you know, this healing substance all of its own, And the meaning that's attached to all of that stuff can be at least as powerful as whatever's in the pill, whether it's inert or not.
Do you think then that medicine over time, people who go into medicine and accept the, I'll call it theater, that they're entering into, this kind of performance that they're entering into, the science aside, do you think that people in medicine, that clinicians become slowly over time blind to the meanings that their actions and the parking lot attendants infuse into the whole?
Yeah. Oh, I think it doesn't happen over time. I think it happens very importantly in medical school. It's a challenge that medical school professors go through to kind of detach meaning from the pharmacology and the surgery and all of the sort of the quote real stuff unquote of medicine, but you know, every doctor grew up being a patient.
Huh.
You know, for 20, 25 years before you get to medical school. You know, your mom takes you to the doctor. And you took those little bitty orange pills that she gave you when you were sick, and then she held you and close and snuggled you and made you feel better. And you learned all that stuff long before you ever went to an anatomy class. And then they drilled it out of you.
Well, you know,
so that you would focus on the acetyl salicylic acid and forget all the rest.
It's interesting that you say this, because after I had read your editorial, I went back to an article by Franz Ingelfinger published about 30 years ago. It was published right after his death. He was the then recently deceased editor of the New England Journal of Medicine, and his article entitled "Arrogance" argues that. And I'll quote, a certain amount of authoritarianism, paternalism, and domination are the essence of the physician's effectiveness. And I suspect that you probably would agree with him.
I think I probably do. I mean, there's lots of different styles, and there's lots of different ways of going about it. There are far, far more women physicians these days than there were in his day, and I often find that women physicians have a quite different kind of take on things than men do.
Mm-hmm.
But often a more sort of collegial and relational than authoritarian and demanding, but not all of them. I've known a couple of pretty dominating women doctors too. But I certainly think that that's very, very often the case. And the thing is that if indeed the physician is careful and makes sure that he's using the proper demeanor for the individual patient, it's just that not all people react the same, and you have to kind of take that into account. I mean, you know, if my doctor is Joe, then I'm Dan. That's kind of the level that I want it to play out on personally. Other people wanted things to play out. Other people really like the sort of the paternal quality of the physician.
Yeah. Well, that your editorial and Ingelfinger's article talk about the importance of, you know, of information and the power that imbues in the clinician. And so that the arrogance that he talks about is not being supercilious. It means arrogating to yourself the power to make a decision on behalf of your patient.
Yeah, that's very, very important, obviously. There are times when, you know, that's all there is if you've got somebody who's comatose.
Well, you know, you're one of the points that you make is that in certain functionally based diseases of depression, for instance, where you can, yes, you can measure chemicals, but then you can also ask the disease is manifest and the patient shows up because they've had symptoms and they're coming to you for alleviation of those symptoms, not because of their FEV1, but because they're feeling suffocated, and
right, exactly.
And clinical medicine teaches that the effect of clinical medicines can be, oh, the FEV1 is too low. We have to crank things up here, even though the patient may feel better and would wonder, why do I know I don't need more medicine. Let me go home now. No, your FEV1 is too low. When you talk with clinicians, what do you advise, and they ask for your advice, I hope that they do ask for your advice.
Not very often, but...
Well, okay, so there are about 1,000 of them out there now listening in.
There you go.
What would you say that they might do differently than they're doing now? I mean, if they could do one thing that's different next week that's, you know, that you've seen as an anthropologist or in your, you know, ethnobotany studies, what would you say? Try this.
I guess one of the things that I notice that it seems to me is a real shame is that, you know, many physicians have a way of, even though they know the literature really well, they have a wonderful way of sort of dismissing the parts that just don't fit. So, for instance, the notion that one of the really tough challenges in biomedicine is low back pain,
mm-hmm.
Which is a congenital condition of rather poorly designed primates who would have much better backs if we were quadrupedal, but we're not.
Mm-hmm.
And the price we pay is that an enormous number of us, especially after we get to 40 or 45 or something like that, or if we've, you know, been really hardworking guys carrying concrete blocks or something, we end up with really bad backs. And there's not just this, it's just not a whole heck of a lot out there for the doctor to do.
Hmm.
There have been some really interesting recent studies which showed that that acupuncture works very well for low back pain,
mm-hmm.
but much better than standard care in both the United States and in Germany. There have been two studies just recently that show that. I think I cited them in this paper,
at least
one of them.
Yes, you do. I'll throw them onto the website so that people can get to them.
But what's really interesting about both of those studies was that they weren't just, you know, standard care and acupuncture. There was standard care, sham acupuncture, and acupuncture. And both the sham acupuncture and the real acupuncture both worked much better than standard care. And I could give you another 20 studies which had similar kinds of results over the last several years, where sertraline and St. John's wort and placebo all have the same amount of effect against a depression. What do you conclude from that study? That nothing has any effect against depression because a placebo was involved? That doesn't follow. And it's you know, when you see that and you remember that the placebo was inert and that the one thing we can't so there was no placebo effect, but there was a doctor effect or something. There was some kind of an effect like that where the shape and the form and the character of the care made patients much better than if you give them some ibuprofen and tell them to rest in bed. Now, what is that? Well, you know, it's a difficult question, and it depends on the circumstances, and it depends on how you're going to practice your medicine. It depends what kind of a person you are and how you're going to interact with your patients. But the key thing that you have to remember is that the interaction between you and your patients is probably more important than anything else. There was another recent study which showed that remifentanil, the effect of remifentanil on people with clinical pain could be doubled or abolished by changing physician behavior around it, by changing the expectations of the people who are going to take it. There's no placebo there. That's one of the most powerful drugs in the arsenal.
Mm.
And you can make its effect go away or double, depending on your attitude and how you talk about it.
Mm.
Well, what does that mean? That means you've got to pay attention to your attitude and how you talk about things.
Well, I think that's great advice. As I said earlier before we started talking and recording, I said I just got a copy of Meaning Medicine and the Placebo Effect, What other influences have you had in your thinking, Dr. Moorman? I mean, what might people read who want to get more information about this whole question, which is not about, you know, data and measurement so much, it's about the intangibles of medicine, the kind of shaman effect, if you will.
That's a good term. Although you got to watch out, those shamans have some pretty powerful stuff in their arsenals. And brugmansia is not a placebo. You know, inside medicine, there's not much there. It's pretty slim pickings, because you know the pharmacological stuff gets more and more powerful every day, and more dangerous every day. I mean, how many things have we had that have, you know, are just starting to go into clinical trials, and all of a sudden they or past clinical trials, and then we find all these incredible negative consequences of these terrible drugs that are not terrible drugs. They're drugs that might be useful in some circumstances, but they get. I guess if there's one thing to be really careful of, it's drug marketing.
I think the listeners are really quite familiar with that.
Yeah, I'm sure they are. It's a tough deal.
So if you said to them, if they said to you as a group, look, I've got a weekend and I want to read something, you know, that's going to open my mind a bit to this to these questions, what
would I send them to? Well, you know, I at about the same time as my book came out, Wayne Jonas and I published an article in Annals of Internal Medicine, which is in a lot of ways, it's a sort of a kind of like an abstract for my book.
Okay.
You can get the whole thing there in like 12 pages.
All right.
It's not very detailed, and it doesn't, you know, it's not real rich.
I want to thank you, Dr. Moorman, for spending time with us today. This is most enlightening. That's it for Conversation 126. Hope you enjoyed it. I did. Earlier podcasts are all available, and they're all free, of course, at podcasts.jwatch.org. Clinical Conversations executive producer is Ador Yano. I'm Joe Ilya. Join us next time for myself and Dr. Danielle Schurer, whom I hope is having a good vacation. Thanks for listening.